I'm happy to be here tonight, and our first speaker is from the Slope Open Discussion Group in Brooklyn. And his name is Barry M., and he's very colorful.
New York City, are you ready? My name is Barry, and I'm a very humble... No. I'm a very grateful alcoholic. And I'm very grateful to be here tonight, but I'm more grateful that you're here. I want to thank Grace and Marianne and the other committee members also. That's a horrible job. The only job worse than that is being treasurer of a group. Counting all those singles, you know, it's terrible. I'd like to tell you a little bit about how I got here. I got on the number one train, and I was here before I know it. Would that it were that easy. I always thought if I got to do this gig, I hoped that the theme would be joy, because joy is my mantra. It's a lot of other people's mantras, I guess, also. But the theme is hope against all odds. And when I seen that, I thought, that really is what my sobriety has been all about, hope against all odds. I celebrated more first anniversaries than anyone I know. The last one I celebrated, a friend said, you know, you're really getting addicted to first anniversary cake. But I thought, you know, I think there's a little more to it than that, you know. And it finally took. I sort of grew up in the shadow of AA. My oldest brother was in and out of the program. And he didn't make it. He paid for his disease with his life. And I was very young. He was 20 years older than I am, was. And I knew, really, as a kid, where alcoholism led. And the one thing I was not going to be when I grew up was an alcoholic. I had two other brothers that were also alcoholic. And neither of my parents were alcoholic. They could have fun with it or without it. And they did. They were incredible people. I was very fortunate to have the parents I had. I drank all through high school, and I really didn't run into any problems with it until I got in beauty school. And halfway through beauty school, they threatened to throw me out. Now, you know, in the rooms, I've heard of people being threatened with being thrown out of law school or medical school, but beauty school. It's a 6-month course. Well, I gotta tell you, I got my act together and I graduated with honors. And I started working for a company out of Chicago, and they sent me to Florida. And I decided I had to get a license because I had learned to drive in a blackout. And I didn't have a license. But in Florida, you gotta have a car if you're gonna, you know, even to go to Key Food, you gotta have a car. So I got a license, and a friend of mine, I was living in West Palm, and a friend of mine who lived in Miami came up one night, and we went out to dinner, and he said, well, how do you like Florida? And I said, oh, I love it. It's so incredible, all these palm trees and the moon and, you know. And I started telling him how I was drinking. You know, I knew he was in the program, and he needed it. God knows he needed it. And he said, you know, if you're going to drink like that, what I would suggest is you leave the car at the bar and take a cab home and then go back and pick up the car in the morning. And I said, uh-huh. And I thought, God, that sounds so alcoholic, you know? And that Saturday, I had my first car accident, and I lost my license, so I started going to AA meetings. What else could I do? And in Florida, this is a long time ago, The people that went to AA at that time seemed much older than I was. They were, you know. I was a snot-nosed kid that didn't know how to handle alcohol. And so I went for 90 days, and I got my license back, and then I started drinking and driving again, and I had another accident. And I thought, oh, I'll never get sober down here. I better go back to New York. So I came back to New York. And I got sober. I guess I had a year down there at one point. And then I got sober up here for about a year. And I went out. And I came back and I went out. And there was a lot of that, you know, in and out, in and out. I think that when Bill left Towns Hospital, he never thought he would drink again. I know when my sponsor left Towns Hospital 10 years after Bill, that she knew she would never drink. And she was an incredible woman and a fabulous sponsor. She was like Auntie Mame. And as you can see, I got a little bit of it too. Anyway, I met this guy in an after-hour place, and I should have known right then, you know, this relationship was going to go nowhere, but I didn't. I was a dumb blonde, and I liked it that way, and so did a lot of other people, I'm told. Anyway, I thought, this guy really needs AA, so I took him to my home group, which was Tudor, where my sponsor held forth every week, and people came to listen to her and to try to understand what she had to give. She had a lot to give. She was an incredible, incredible woman. I was very lucky to have her as long as I did. Anyway, I thought I would get him sober, and then I would continue to drink like a lady. When I drank, I was anything but a lady. Anyway, I thought, well, the only way this relationship is going to work is if I get sober too. So we were sober together in AA for 5 years, and then he slipped, and then I slipped. In the next 2.5 years, everything that I had heard about in the rooms began happening to me, and I couldn't believe it. On December 27th of 1973, or that Christmas Eve of 1973, I was at a meeting at St. Luke's, and it was when we were meeting in the little wood frame building. And I looked around that room and I said to myself, self, this meeting is full of losers. And I gathered my mink around me and I left. Well, I'm here to tell you, I was the only loser in that meeting that night. Because I went home and I told my ex-lover that I was going out to get a pack of cigarettes, and there were a carton of them in the kitchen cabinet, you know. And he said, okay. And I came home around, I don't know what time it was. It was the worst drunk I had ever been on in my life. And there was a woman from New York visiting another woman from New York in Florida who lived next door to my original sponsor. And they gathered around in a circle and prayed over me that Christmas Eve. So Christmas, the 26th, I woke up and I had a big white poodle named Martini. I got her as a gift the first time I celebrated 1 year. And she used to go to meetings with me, and when I slipped, she would go drinking with me. And one time in West Palm Beach, I was in a bar, and the stools had backs on them. And she used to sit at the bar, and they'd give her ice cubes. And this drunk walks in, he takes one look at this great big white poodle sitting at the bar, and he turned right around and walked right back out. He probably thought he was hallucinating. Anyway, I got her out from under the bed where she was spending a lot of her life because she was becoming very paranoid with all this insane merry-go-round of alcoholism around her. And when I woke up that morning, a still, small voice said to me, "This does not have to be the rest of your life." And when I got her out from under the bed and fed her, I went to a real estate agent and I found an apartment that was so small you could put this apartment in the dining room of the apartment I was moving out of. And it was perfect. So I'm December 27th of 73. I did not have a drink. And I haven't had one since. And let me tell you, sobriety is the best high I have ever been on. You can't buy this in a bottle or a pill or in any of the crap that's out there. But what you can do is experience this love that is in this room right now at this moment in time. The first dinner I went to was the last one that Bill spoke at. And tickets were $12.50. So we live in inflated times. But I gotta tell y'all, they were just as hard to sell at $12.50 as they are at $100. There was another woman and I that thought they should have been $100 then, and it's taken how many years? If you wanna know what the answer to that little quiz is, it's in the 12 and 12 in the seventh tradition. Read it sometime. While you're here tonight, you know, I always do a commercial whenever I talk for Bill's dinner because I really believe in it. It's been a big night in my life for a long, long time. It was a big night when my sponsor spoke. She had 45 years that night. And it was an incredible, incredible meeting, like this one is going to be, because the two people after me are both very good speakers. I have always gotten a lot out of this dinner. The minute my foot steps into this ballroom, and it was this ballroom that Bill spoke at the last time, probably at the same podium. Although it seemed like it went all the way to the floor, but who knows? You know, it's a long time ago, and a lot has changed in the meantime. The following year, of course, he was very ill, and we played a recording of him from the hospital room that he was in. And then after that, we started doing celebrity speakers. and then we ran out of celebrities. So we went to circuit speakers. Now I'm glad that we're back to celebrity speakers. You know, I promised myself I was going to behave tonight. I know y'all know that promise. God, I promised myself I was going to behave for so long that it just didn't matter anymore, you know. But what sobriety has given me, I wanted two things when I came in. I wanted a longer mink coat and bigger diamond rings. Same old mink coat and the same old diamond rings I came in with. But what I've gotten in sobriety, you cannot measure in material things. And I am a real material girl, let me tell you. I believe heavy in the retail therapy. Never get tired of that kind of therapy, you know. Not only do I get to experience this on an annual basis, but I get to do things like the international, which is always mind-blowing. If you haven't already registered, do it soon, because believe me, there's going to be a lot of us there in the end of June and July. These are the things, sponsoring people and watching them grow. Having had the sponsor I had for so long, who taught me so much about this program and about life, and I have tried to pass it on to people that I sponsor, because it really is about passing it on. I just think that AA is the hope of the world. I have always thought that. When people of like minds get together, the energy that is created is so phenomenal. It beats war, it beats hate, it beats all of the negative conditions in the world, and it beats alcoholism. Imagine, you know, when I was sitting on a bar stool, did I ever do that? I guess I did. It seems so foreign to my nature today, because this feels normal to me. Sitting on a bar stool, having lost the ability to communicate, I could only communicate with the reflection in the mirror behind the bar. That's a horrible, horrible space to be in. And communicating has always been a big part of my life, and I'm very grateful for that. I have a little favor to ask of you, since you're in the room tonight. If you have a good time, next year, bring 9 of your friends with you. You know, there's 1,600 of us here tonight. I always say this ballroom should be 2,000 strong. And it was when Bill was alive. And this is a living program. So just think about it. Make that commitment to yourself. You know, I've been selling tickets for years, and I love it. And my sister Peggy, who's out there somewhere, where are you, honey? Has been doing the same thing. 5 years ago tonight, Peggy and I were at an anniversary watch for somebody. And if you don't know what that's about, well, find out what it's about. See me after the meeting. And that person is in the room, as is Peggy tonight. And he's going to be celebrating 6 years tomorrow. Midnight, at midnight tonight. Yeah, you're right. That's what AA is all about. There's a guy in Brooklyn. You all know about Brooklyn. Brooklyn is getting very chic since the musical opened, folks. There was a guy who celebrated 50 years at the Bay Ridge Group last month, the last Sunday of the month. That says to me, this program works. This moment in time, this program works. I want to thank you, and I want to thank y'all for being the wind beneath my wings.
Hi, everybody. My name is Joe. I'm an alcoholic.
Hey, Joe.
Thank you so much, Barry, and this committee and everything that's here. It's just, you got to see it from up here, what it looks like. Oh, my God. You know, I think alcohol taught me one thing growing up in Brooklyn as a young kid. It taught me how to be fearful. I can remember sitting in the kitchen of the house and growing up and coming in and out of the house. And I remember one day I came into the house and my mother's eyes, both her eyes were black and blue, lip was swollen. And I went off to school and the teacher says, what's wrong with you? You don't pay attention. Are you dopey? I just looked at her and I couldn't express what I just seen. And there was no way that I was going to learn what I needed to learn. So for me, alcoholism was just a hard road, you know, and I had a father that was very scary to me. You know, he was in private sanitation in Brooklyn for many, many years. If there's any agents around, but if, you know, I just want to get myself to where, talk into the mic. Can you hear me now? All right. Okay. Yeah. Coming into AA was a strange place. You know, I think in Brooklyn at the time there maybe was four Italians in the whole, maybe the five boroughs. I don't know. You know, it's just, we really wanted to be, you know, we wanted everything that you guys had. We got it now. You know? If you look around the room, there's a load of us here. When I, you know, when I think back, my mother used to say, Joe, you know, to my brothers and sisters, you know, you got to show love. You're Italian, you know. And if somebody would knock on the door, she'd say, who the hell is that, you know? So the messages that we get when we're kids are a lot different, you know, than people in AA tell you, call me. And, yeah, all right, I'll call you. You know, when you first get sober, you come over to the house, and it's just a strange place to be, you know, coming to AA. I joined the Navy as a young kid. I went completely around the world. I was in a lot of trouble. I remember that the captain said, Joe, if we could keep you locked up on ship, you're okay. He said, as soon as you get into some town, you're always in trouble, you know. I didn't drink for a long period of time. I got sober at, I came into AA when I was 26. And I looked around the room and I sat down and I remember saying to some guy, I really don't belong here. It looked like a James Cagney movie, you know. It was just, I really didn't feel, you know, like I was ready, you know. But he said to me, you're all right, just sit here. You just pay attention to what's being said. And some guy come over to me and he said, how old are you? I said, 26. He said, I probably spilled more beer on my tie than you drank, you know. And I didn't know what to say, you know. I just took it and sat down and I started to listen. How I got to that meeting was an article in a Daily Mirror at the time. And it said five stories of alcoholics. And I woke up on a train, and I was sleeping, and I started to read it, and the words jumped out of the page. There was girls and guys and older people and younger people. And for the first time in my life, I was able to feel like there was some place for me to go to, somewhere, you know. The first time I came to this Bill W. dinner, I bought a suit from St. Vincent de Paul for $4 on 4th Avenue and 9th Street. And I come in, I really thought I was the cat's, you know what, you know. And my buddy John, that's up here now, I guess we're neck and neck, 29, 30 years, you know. Going through all kinds of things, you know. When you come in young, there's a payoff. The difference is that everything you do is on the front page of the AA magazine, you know. When you get sober at a young age, you go through a tremendous... My daughter was 4 years old when I got sober. My son was two. And the kid that has the problem wasn't even born yet. So, you know, for me, my whole... I guess for 30 years, the past 30 years, I've been in sobriety. There was that guy that I told you that I was deadly afraid of, my dad, and my sponsor at the time said, Joe, when you go to his house, give him a kiss. And I looked at him and I said, are you crazy? He said, no, give him a kiss because it'll be good for you. And I remember the first time I walked into his house and I leaned over and I kissed him. And he looked at me like I was crazy, you know. I could see the fear on his face, you know. And every time that I went back to that house, I would go over to him and I would kiss him. And one time, as the years passed by, I remember running out of the house. I couldn't stop. And he looked at me and he said, where are you going? I said, I got to go to work. I'm late, Dad. He said, no kiss? I think that one of the ways that you know you're really growing in sobriety is when you could forgive. One of the hardest things for us guys to do. Forgive, and then when you think about that person, your jaw don't clench up, you know? Yeah, I forgive him. Yeah. I used to pal around with my brother-in-law. He was about 12 years older than I was, you know. And he would say to me, Joe, my God, at night when you're drinking, he said, you're a firecracker. You got answers. You're snappy. He said, but the next day, he said, you are sickening. He said, you're like an oo bird. An oo bird has... 10-inch testicles and 4-inch legs, and every time he comes in for a landing, he goes, ooh. My wife would say to me, where's the money, Joe? Ooh. Where'd you park the car? Some of us are ripped out of the same page, you know. A lot of ooh birds on there. But when I look back and I look at the crew that's here from Staten Island, the quiet guys up on the top up there. when I first moved over from Brooklyn to Staten Island, I think they had 4 meetings at the time, you know, 4 or 5 meetings. If you stay sober and you stay active, all kinds of people are going to come into your life. And we not only talk this talk at meetings, we bring something to the table wherever we go. I retired from the military. I met my old skipper over here. My captain was here. He's staying sober. He become a colonel, I guess. So, this program really works, you know. I took that to the military with me. I took sobriety into the TA with me. retired from both places. And wherever I went, I'd take these values with me. And all it means is a little bit of respect. It opens up a lot of doors for you. I remember my sponsor, I took him to the Midnight Group in Brooklyn. It used to be on Church Avenue. And it was a pretty tough group. Bill's pitcher would fly out the window some nights, and the couches would go out onto Church Avenue. And it was a pretty rough group. And my sponsor got sober in a Greenpoint group. And I wanted him to tell about his days in Korea when he used to train the dogs on a DMZ up there. You know? And it come his turn to comment, and he said, my name is Mike, and he says, I'm looking for love. And I wanted to go under the chair, you know. I wanted to tell him about these tough stories, you know, not this stuff, you know. Yeah. I guess 30 years later, I look around this room, and I know the guys that are here and the girls that are here, and it's what we're all looking for. It's how we go about it that separates us, you know. When I think I need more than you, that's when my problems start, you know. What it's like now, I think back to a lot of the days when I would go through things that so many of us go through in sobriety that get sober young, you know. Not everybody stays married. Not everybody has the children that just come up and off to Harvard and Yale, you know. There's a lot of avenues that they take, some of our kids. I remember trying to tell my side of the story to my son, John. And I said, John, you know, alcoholics explain everything to everybody. If the bus driver would let us, we'd probably explain all the way to the next stop on how we feel, you know. But and I started explaining to him, you know, and he's driving a car, and he looked at me, and he said, Dad, I'm 7. He said, we kind of lose our way, you know, when we're going through something. You know, a lot of people say to me, Joe, what do you think the answer is? What's the lesson? You know, well, we didn't get to the end of it yet. You know, we'll know when we finish it. You know, and what it's like today. I make a lot of meetings, and I'm surrounded with guys that wanna and ladies that wanna be in AA. I put myself at the right spot, you know. Today, that ooh bird don't come out too much. You know? When it does, it's usually from something from my past or some mistake I made in sobriety, you know. And I think that's why it's so hard to explain what it's like today, because we're humans and we make mistakes, you know. I guess I pay many, many times over for the promises that I made that I didn't keep. And I pay many times over for the thoughts that I should have been a different father, or I should have been there, or I should have been there. But my son, John, never seen me drink. And the only time he's seen friends of mine, they were all sober. So this disease comes in people, you know, and you can't catch it from anybody. My family, even in separation and divorce, there was a lot of respect for each other. And that's because of this program. I knew there was things that had to be worked out, and I knew you couldn't just stay sober and not try to do the right thing, you know. That wasn't going to work for me. When Angela and I were called up to go to a hospital, you know, you hear the old-timers say this, and that's why I think that we really need to stay close to AA, because our lives are always changing. But Angela and I, we went up to see my son up in the hospital, and there was a cop on the door, and he was handcuffed to his bed. And when you're sober and you see a buddy or a stranger handcuffed to a bed, you kind of get the chills, you know. But when you see a son
handcuffed to a bed. You don't know how powerless we are over this disease. You know. So for me, seeing that made me realize how gifted so many of us are here that are sober. And at one time, I wanted to enhance my drinking life. Today, I'm so grateful that I was spared so much, so much. And the people around me were spared so much, you know. Today, I want to enhance my sobriety. I don't want to embellish my drinking life. It was nothing to embellish. I remember being brought back to the ship one time in a paddy wagon, and I'm laying on the deck of the truck in the back, and my head is laying on the this cold deck, you know, and I hear them yelling, "Watch him, watch him." And I got scared because I thought the guy was going to start kicking me, that they were saying to watch him, you know. I'm kind of hoovered over, you know, and I'm really nervous that this guy's going to start pouncing on me, you know. And the door's open, and it's me, you know. And I step back, and they drew back on their clubs, you know. And I said, you know, I was 127 pounds. I think if the wind would have come over, it would have knocked me over, but the put a couple of drinks in us and a lot of muscles in a glass of beer for me, you know, a lot of muscles. So what were the messages? What were the things that I needed to learn? What was the things that kept me coming back to AA? You know, when I would go up to the villa, Jim and Sue were up there, and I was sober, and a whole bunch of us would go up there on a retreat, and I would look around at the mugs on some of the guys, and I said, God, we were destined to be drunks. And here we are singing Amazing Grace, you know. I would be on a job. I became an iron worker. I became an iron worker, and I'm afraid of height. You know. Would be in the break time, we would have a break, and the guys would be reading the track sheet and reading Playboy, I would be reading Louise Hay, you know. I really wanted to change, you know. I wanted to stop this pain that was in there, you know. I would make meetings and I would watch a guy, you know, just like I did when I was in the service. I'd walk into a bar and I would look down this side and I would look down that side of the bar, and the guy that had the most stripes, I would say, give me what he's drinking, you know. When I come to an AA meeting, I look around and I want to be the guy that has the most respect. I want to be the guy that is big enough to walk away, you know, that doesn't go out of his way to be right, you know. The thing that kept me coming back to AA was the warmth and the feeling that, hey, kid, you belong here, you know. And the thing that I took to my family was the ability to say, you know, I don't know. I don't know. To look at my son and say, I love you, and I just want to see the best for you. And I know that this disease is bigger than both of us. But if you stay sober, you got a shot, you know. I don't know if my son John is going to make it. But I know that there's a tremendous amount of guys up here that together we're going to go through anything, you know. And that's what I needed my whole life. I needed that feeling that I was safe, that no matter what came down, and to so many of us, divorce is not easy. Child, bringing up children in this day and age is not easy. Being pushed aside after a certain age in the program, you know, you're kind of like, you're not cool anymore. And yet, I think of the guys that were here before me, and the message that they gave me, that we paid a high price for that seat. And don't give it up for anybody, you know. So tonight, if you're standing there and you're sitting there, and I'm standing, and you guys are sitting, if you got this thing they call sobriety, hold on to it. And there's only one way that we can hold on to it is give it away, you know. And just know that the way of life in AA is a way of life of service. When I'm given to somebody, that's my purpose. And I think that very few people know what their purpose is in this life. But when I could see a guy that's filled with fear like I was, don't know what's going to happen to his son, don't know what's going to happen in his marriage, don't know what's going to happen in his life and on the edge of his seat, and we got that power to say, you're going to be okay. You're going to get through this. Don't drink, make a meeting, and walk with me, you know, and we'll get through anything. God bless you and thank you.
Thank you, Joe. And now I'd like to introduce our third speaker from the St. Nicholas Group in Manhattan, Margareta S.
Woohoo! That light is bright. Hello, family. My name is Margareta, and I am a grateful alcoholic. And I'm always grateful and happy to be in a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous. Because this is where I come to learn how not to pick up that first drink one day at a time, no matter what's going on in my life, good, bad, or indifferent. And I keep showing up for the healing that's in the rooms of AA. And y'all know that we got healing in the rooms of AA. That's why we keep coming back. Oh my God, I'm so grateful to be here. A little on the nervous side, but it's good. I want to thank the committee and everybody here because we all know it takes a lot of work to pull one of these off. So thank you for your service. Service is important. And that's what's so wonderful about Alcoholics Anonymous. We can find our niche and do service. It's not about not doing it. You just find something to do and do it. Because in order to keep it, I better be giving it away. Because I'm dealing with a deadly disease that's cunning, baffling, insidious, and powerful, and always waiting in ambush. I better not let my guard down. Because the disease of alcoholism wants me back. But I got the program of recovery. And a program of recovery is not gonna let me down. But I gotta be willing to do it. I have to do a day at a time. And don't forget, we got a built-in forgetter. So I gotta keep showing up so I can grow up. I gotta keep showing up so I can be reminded of what I'm dealing with. A disease that wants me dead. And this is no light matter. This is not a little casual thing. This is serious business. We're talking about life and death here. Because we know we can sit here right in AA and go stark raving mad without a drink. And you know what I mean. That's why we need the program of recovery of the 12 steps, 12 traditions, a home group, a sponsor, fellowship, one day at a time, all through a loving higher power. Because without that, I'm screwed. When I start thinking on my own, doing my own thing, I'm in trouble. That's why I got to keep coming back to y'all because y'all know how to patch me up, heal me up, prop me up, and send me on my way a day at a time. And see, I'm dealing with something that wants to tear me apart, so I got to stay here a day at a time. I am so grateful to be here. I'm grateful to my home group, by the way, the St. Nicholas Group up in Harlem. Yeah! And I want to thank all the people who are here, all of y'all who've been helping me stay sober day at a time. I have not done this alone. My sobriety date, in case you're interested, is June 5th, 1987. So for over 17 years, y'all have been showing me how to do this, how not to pick up that first drink. Margareta, how do you not pick up the first drink when life is just woo all over you? How do you do it? How do you get through the pain of just waking up? How do you get the pain of the stinking thinking? How does that work? Turn it over to a higher power. share it, and keep on living. Keep on stepping one day at a time. It's not about holding on to stuff. It's about giving it up, letting it go. And you know, they said our past becomes our greatest asset. So let that be. So I don't have to worry about what happened yesterday, what happened when I was a child and all that. Only thing that matters is today. Am I trying to stay on the path today? That's the most important thing. I also, I have to say it, my sponsor is here. I love my sponsor, Gene H. from the St. Paul's School. And for those of us who have sponsors and have used sponsors and have been sponsored, I mean sponsored, we are so blessed. And that's why it's important that we give it away. Now, Gene's the type of sponsor. See, you can't have no third person in your conversation with Gene. When I call him, I can't talk about nobody but me. He said, I only want to hear from you, Margaretta. So that cuts out the gossip. And you know, gossip can kill. That means I got to keep the focus on me. It's not about other people. It's about me. Because anytime I want to look at you, I don't want to look at me. And I got to watch me because the disease of alcoholism is always trying to get me. So that means that y'all are relieved. Society's not my problem. And this is some magnificent stuff. So the only thing that I have to concentrate on is what's going on with Margaretta, not what's going on with other people. You know, I always like to say that I wasn't a falling down drunk, but I was starting to do some mighty strange things standing up. Okay? I was the Black Marilyn Monroe type. Hot, steamy, voluptuous, crazy. The only thing that mattered to me is how I thought you thought about me. Now, you know that's sick. If your opinion of me is more important than my opinion about me, you know I was in trouble. And my behavior was such that, believe me, I put myself in all sorts of emotional and mental trouble, all due to this disease of alcoholism. I was married with children, but okay, you know, but I was too busy putting on mascara. I wanted to have people do the things that I was supposed to do, like clean up and cook. You know, I wanted to be married, but I didn't want the responsibility. And you know, this is a part of the disease of alcoholism, this self-centeredness. It was always about me, me, me. It was all in my head. I was careful not to let other people know it, but I was always thinking about me, me. It's always about me. And my behavior was such that it was always about me. I wanted to do the right thing, but because of the disease of alcoholism, I could not. How I got to Alcoholics Anonymous, well, I was having trouble. I was having trouble on my job. And finally, thank God, now listen, it doesn't matter how we get here, as long as we get here, I got busted on my job with dirty urine. Oh, I'm so happy. Don't matter. I got here. I got humiliated. Everything was on the line. And I'm so glad that my higher power just rescued me out of my madness and my misery. This is why we say the past will become our greatest asset. And so out of that situation, a short time later, I went into detox. And that's where y'all came in. Because this is why it's so important to do service. Because y'all brought the message of hope into that detox. And y'all shared with me, and it was something, it's something about the spirit and the language of the heart. When the people from AA came in, I knew I was at home because I had been tired. I had been sick and tired of being sick and tired, but I didn't know how to stop. And y'all came in there, and the higher power just kind of got me quiet for a moment, and I heard y'all, and I felt y'all, and I'm telling you something, I have not looked back a day at a time because I want not to ever have to go back to how it was a day at a time. But, you know, you just can't stay here a day at a time without going through something. And believe me, over the years, it has been truly life on life's terms. You know, when I first got a detox, you know, I met this woman. She became my sponsor. Her name was Barbara R. And Barbara was good. She had like a few more months than me, but what she knew how to do was take newcomers to all the sober functions. And so she got me introduced by just taking me to functions, and I danced my way the first year to just staying sober. You know how that is. Oh, my God, I spent 4 hours getting dressed, and you know how the deal goes. And After that, then I got another sponsor. Her name was Peggy. Oh, Peggy S. She's in Florida now. Oh, Peggy was a tough broad. I like tough sponsors, right? And she was tough. And she used to say, now listen here. I want you to sit down, and if you're going to make a name for yourself in AA, let it be a good one. And she meant business. And so I said, oh, okay, I like this woman. And, you know, she began to sponsor me, but she retired and she moved away. And then I got the sponsor that I have now that I've been having for over 12 years, Gene. And Gene took me through the 12 steps, and I used to meet him every 2 weeks in Queens. And he would have me read the step in the big book, and in the 12 and 12, read the pamphlet. And yeah, I had to answer questions. What does the step mean to me? How does it help me to stay sober? Oh, I mean, I was working, baby. You know, because he told me that, Gene says that, he used to say, the newcomer's in critical condition. They need help, and you can't be messing around. You got to get busy in order to stay here. And a day at a time, I understand what he means. In order to stay here, we really, truly have to do the work, because the disease of alcoholism, it's cunning, and it really can try to come back in so many ways. And in order for me to not fall into that, I have to keep working. I have to keep turning my life and pull over to the care of God one day at a time. And so I met with Gene every 2 weeks, and we went through the 12 and 12, and I would share, and I would just completely, something happened. Something magnificent has happened and has been happening since I got here a day at a time. When I was 2 years sober, my husband, the husband that I had, he was still doing his thing, and so we separated. And he went on about his business, and I went on about the business of trying to stay sober and do the right thing. And it was a journey, you know, three children and everything that comes with it. But you know what? It's something about the power of Alcoholics Anonymous and what it gives us, that we can go through anything. Oh, my God, can we go through anything a day at a time? And it's nothing but life on life's terms. It's nothing original. It's nothing exceptional. But because I'm an alcoholic, I can't handle stress. Oh, I remember, wait a minute, the other day, my husband said to me, baby, on your way home, would you bring some water and get some bananas just at the corner store? I said, that's too much for me. I can't do that. That's too much. Some days it's just too much. I can't handle it. Then I got, just can't even get through, you know, so I had to, you know, and then I had to, like, because of the program, I was like, now, you know that ain't nice. Come on, you being all selfish and self-centered again. Let go and let God. Now, you can do this. Now, what I want you to do is just go in the store first. See, because sometimes it's too much just to go to the store. Just go into the store now. Easy does it. Easy does it. You can handle it, girl. Go in that store and get that water. That's AA. Because we're winners, baby. We can go to the store now. Right. Get higher power. And as Gene always taught me, listen, God wants you to give everything up to him. Give it up. And so I've been learning a day at a time how to just give it up. Give it to God. And you know when I do that, my life is always better. That moment is always better. Why I don't do it consistently all the time, I don't have the answer to that. But I do know when I'm willing to do it, things are just better. And maybe it's just part of the disease of alcoholism. Maybe it is that thing up here. So, you know, over 17 years, you know, things, life has been wonderfully interesting. And, you know, I've come in here and I found out that, yes, I'm powerless over alcohol. I know that now, because all I got to do is take my inventory for 2 seconds. Didn't want to pay rent, you know, all that sort of good stuff. And, you know, then you know, I knew my life was unmanageable. I knew that there was some sort of problem. And then as I kept coming, I knew that, oh, yes, I think I have been insane. Because anytime you don't want to pay your bills and you're with people you don't want to be with, you're doing things you don't want to do, something ain't quite right. And I began to see that I wasn't quite right. Okay, so I can cut to the insane. Okay, I need to be willing to turn my life and will over to the care of God. You darn right, I better be willing to turn my life all over to the care of God, because if I don't, I am screwed, because I cannot do me. I cannot make me better. And you know, most of us have tried to make ourselves the best we can be. I mean, if you're like me, I mean, just going at it. I am going to be perfect according to my Greta, and it does not work. I hit that brick wall. Woo-hoo-hoo, God help me. Please. I'm in pain. And that's when I get the peace that passes all understanding. So I need the higher power. Yes, I need to turn my life and love to the care of God. Yes, I better take that fearless and moral inventory, because I got to find out where I have been screwing me up all these years. I got to find out about those defects of character. I have to see how they have always ambushed. I have to see how I have always slid back into a defective character. And what does that mean to me? What does that represent for me? And how can I let that go and give it to God a day at a time? Because I got to find out about me, not you. Me, because I'm the one who lives with me. You don't live with me up here, so I got to be working on me. And then I come in here and I find out that I got to share this with somebody. Oh, please, if you're holding on to some secrets and some stuff, give it up. Fine. But wait a minute. Find a closed mouth person, please. Give it up. But no matter what happens, we got to accept it. If something comes back the way you don't like it, we still got to accept it, because it's still a day at a time. And I'm still responsible for my peace of mind. My peace of mind is not contingent on what other people think, say, or do. My peace of mind is contingent on me being willing to turn my life and will over to the care of God a day at a time. Now, even if you wrong me, even if you step on my foot or do something or hurt me, I have a responsibility to take what you did, which maybe was a wrong, and not re-injure myself with it with a resentment. Now, check that out. I got the responsibility to do that, not put it on you. You hurt my feelings. You didn't do what I wanted you to do. See, I got to watch out for me. I'm responsible to go to my higher power so I can get the peace that passes all understanding is what I'm seeking anywhere. I'm not seeking money, property, and prestige. Now, wait a minute. I'm not saying I don't want money, property, and prestige. But that's not the hit. That's not the real deal. Because a lot of us come in here, we get a lot of things that we want. We get the money, we get the job, we get the house, we get the da-da-da-da-da-da, and we get stuff. We get so much stuff we can't even get into our own homes. We be cramming stuff in. How many more black pair of shoes can you have, Margaret? Come on. Get all this stuff. And then we say, okay. I say, well, listen, wait a minute now. Let me go over and get that thing over there, because when I get that, I'm going to be fabulous, because you know, always got to be fabulous. So, okay, well, maybe I want to go back to school. Maybe I want to remember that. Because everything I do is so I can be fabulous. And you'll know that I'm on board. And you know what? It doesn't work. Because it's an inside job. And if it's an inside job, it has nothing to do with money, property, or prestige. It has everything to do with my relationship with my higher power and me being willing to let go of my self-centeredness, my self-absorption, my selfishness that is inside of me due to this disease of alcoholism. And until I'm ready to do those things, let go, and seek the peace that only can come inside, it'll never work. I'll always be seeking, and I'll never find anything. So, okay, I know I'm insane. I know I got to have this higher power. I know I got to have another person. As Gene talks about, I got to have a spiritual team. Myself, another person, and a higher power. We got to have the spiritual team to arrest this disease one day at a time. Spiritual team. So I know that I need a spiritual team. I need this higher power to work through me and to release me of the bondage of self. See, because I'm locked in myself, and I can't get out of myself without your showing me the way, and I believe that God has given you to me and me to you for us to show each other the way. And then I've come to recognize that, you know, a day at a time, you know, I got to make those demands. You know, we got to get that list going now. Everybody got, you know, we got to get the list going. Got to write down who has offended me, who I've offended, and you know, got to put down all them institutions that we owe money to, or at least I owed money to, got to do all that sort of stuff, and then I got to be willing a day at a time to make amends to everybody. Why? So I can have the freedom that passes all understanding. Not so you'll like me, but so I can have the freedom inside my head. Then I gotta also double my efforts all the time. I gotta constantly be taking my inventory and not yours. Oh my God. I gotta try to do things that are right and then try not to let my ego tell me, well, go tell everybody you did it. You know, because my ego wants to be fed. Oh my God. It has a ferocious appetite and it wants me to prop myself up and let you know I'm goddamn going fabulous and don't you know who I am? But recovery teaches me I must do things quietly and anonymously. And that's where I grow up. Oh, gosh. So a day at a time, you know, the march is still on. And then, you know, so we take the spot check inventory. I got to be looking at me. I got to see if I'm going towards a drink or away from a drink. I got to watch my behavior. I got to keep an eye on me. My sponsor taught me that I have to become a first-rate detective with myself. I got to know when I'm lying to me. I got to know when I'm setting myself up because I'm dealing with something that's vicious. And it's all up here in my mind. You know, we could be walking in there looking all sane and wonderful and be crazy as a bed bug. You know what I'm talking about. Ready to act somebody up and crazy. You know, come on. Baby. No, man. This thing is, we look good tonight, but baby, we all know what be going on in our heads, okay? So let me not get, as they say, let's not get it twisted. I know what this can do. And, you know, so I got to be constantly seeking through prayer and meditation to build my conscious contact with God. Why? Because if I rest on my laurels, I am headed for trouble. It is not about getting comfortable. It's not about just doing what I need to do just to get by. I have to keep building and building. But you know what I found out a day at a time? Life will take care of it. I ain't got to worry about it. Because when the pain starts sucking it to me, oh, my God. The pain will make me drop to my knees and beg for help. So a day at a time, if you don't drink, you're going to do the work or you're going to go crazy. There's just no getting around it. I mean, that's my experience. Let me put it like that. Got to do the work or go crazy one. It's no other way out of it. And so, you know, and now in order to keep it, what we got to do? Give it away. Come on now. Got to give it away in order to keep it. Now, not to give away no mess, but to come on in here as I've been taught and to get these 12 steps and 12 traditions working in my life so I can pass that on and not my garbage. That's why Gene won't allow no third persons in the conversation. I called Gene to tell him something. Everything is related right back to a step, a tradition, letting go, letting God. And that has served me over the years because, you know, it comes a time and it's like the light bulb truly, it gets brighter and brighter. I understand. Yes, that is what it is. It is that relationship with the higher power. Oh, yes, I must let go. I must be willing to just keep on going forward. I must be willing to take time for prayer and meditation. I must be still. These are the things that y'all have all taught me a day at a time, and we continue to do them. And, you know, so we're here. And it's no by accident sort of thing, I don't believe. We're here. And I know that I have to try my very best to care and love everyone that comes in my path. I said try now. I have to try. And I have to check me out when I'm thinking negative about someone. Why am I thinking negative about that person? What is it about them that pisses me off? And then I'll find out what the real deal is about me. Because you are me and I am you. So when I see negative in you, I'm really seeing negative in me. And so I gotta keep looking at me. So, you know, hey, it's simple, you know, hey, simple program for complicated people and, you know, but Bob and Bill had us pegged. I mean, how they did this program. Oh, I get like, whoa, God, how did they know us so well? How did they know in that short amount of time to write these principles, to write down this whole guideline for alcoholics? How did they knew it had to be a guiding hand, a guiding force. They got us pegged to the teeth. So all I got to do is use the literature, use the big book, use the step book, use the literature to help me get in and out of trouble with myself one day at a time. So what do I have to do in order to stay here?
Keep doing what I've been doing. Keep doing it. Now, you know that I told you, when I was 2 years sober, my husband and I, we broke up, and I said, good riddance. I don't, I want a new one anyway. Shit, excuse me, we're taped. Sorry, guys. I want a new one, But you know what? God has such a sense of humor. Let me tell you. Now, I have made my claim. I want 5 or 6. I want a bunch of guys. Just let me have my way. Nothing ever worked out. Nothing. But pay attention when things don't work out. God be talking. Now, do you know, I wasn't thinking about that husband no more. I had already put that man out of my mind. Do you know God, now not me, God put that man back in my life. We back together. And you know what? Now that we back together, I'm at peace. All the other time I was searching and looking, I never had no peace. Now I'm back, I got peace. That's high power. That wasn't me, because I definitely wasn't looking in that direction. So I'm saying this to say, pay attention. We got to pay attention to what's going on in our lives, in all areas of our lives, And this man has taught me, and he has 9 years now. And, God works in mysterious ways. And you know what? This man has taught me more about patience and tolerance and love. And, I thought I was the big shot. Hey, man, I got years on you. I'm the boss. I got 17, you got 9, okay? Let's play the numbers here. I got more sobriety. I've got it. I have seen my selfishness at depth. And not because he's never said, you're selfish. I've seen it through his kindness and his love. Something I could never see before. Oh, my God, don't tell me the blind don't see. We come into AA, keep the plug in the jug. The dead do rise, the deaf do hear. Something miraculous happened. I didn't see that. A truck could have knocked me down. I would not have seen that, because that was not what I was looking for. And look at that. Now I got peace. So, I have to continue to pay attention to what God wants in my life and not what I want in my life. And be willing to just keep putting one foot in front of the other, even when it's painful. And, of course, it's the pains of growing up, of course. But we don't give up. We stay sober no matter what. We go to our home group. We make those business meetings. We help the newcomers so they don't take over. Okay? Newcomers cannot take over until they have been passed on 12 traditions, 12, steps, and they've been here a long time. Please don't let the newcomer take over the group. Okay? Please, people who've been here for a while, stay in your group and help your group stay a group. And everybody has a place, of course. And we all need everybody, newcomers and old-timers and in between us. But please, let's not pass the responsibility over to the newcomers who don't always know what to do. Okay? All right. That's my commercial break. So I think, are we out of time? Okay. Oh, I can keep going. Shoot. A little while. I can't say too much, though, about the responsibility of peace of mind that comes from being willing to use the program. And I can't say too much about not allowing myself to be pulled back in to the depths of alcoholism because I become stubborn and self-centered and fearful. And fear will wipe, I know fear has wiped me out many times, and resentments have wiped me out many times. And these are the booby traps that I always have to be aware of a day at a time. And only thing I have to do is keep on showing up, keep on being willing, keep on trying to grow and learn in my sobriety, keep on reading that literature, because, you know, I mean, yeah, okay, if the book is all marked up, then get a new one, okay, you know, but I got to keep reading that book. I got to keep sharing, because illuminations continually come up after reading that book. Yeah, that book, that big book of Alcoholics Anonymous. Yes, that 12 and 12. Keep on letting it come close to me. Keep on with my sobriety, because it's the most precious gift that I have. I do not want to, as Gene would say, that would be like spitting in God's face. So I have to be careful about my behavior, how I treat others, and what am I supposed to do a day at a time. And I found out something else. It's okay to get still. It's okay to be still and just feel that stillness and just let the higher power come on in there and guide me and put me where I belong. So I just want to say again, my home group's the St. Nicholas Group. Please come up and visit us. We meet on Thursdays at 7, and Sundays at 4 is our open meeting, so come on up. And as a matter of fact, our annual Old Timers Day is coming up in December. So listen out for that so you can come up and visit with us. So again, let there be no bickering among us. Let there be nothing but love, the healing force. Let's not injure each other, because I know I've been hurt enough out there. So thank you for my sobriety.